GM, how is it going, Evan?
GM, GM, welcome to the party, everybody. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm so glad to be here.
Super excited. Last week we obviously got a little rugged, so sorry about that. Glad you come back. Can try it again.
All good things. I'm sure that some of us have experienced more than one of a post-Elon Twitter space. So, as in
Exactly.
all things, we are learning from the version of the internet we have now and building an even better one together.
Indeed, I love that. If he can do a million plus person spaces and have it work successfully, then I think we can too. At least on our smaller audience as a whole. Last week, you were at NFT NYC, and we were talking about just your excitement and some of the announcements and your award. You want to give us a little bit of a wrap up now that it's been a week or so?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for those of y'all who might not be familiar, NFT NYC is a fairly long-standing conference in New York that actually is really more of a decentralized event, as with most things in our industry. So, many different side events, conferences, all occurring around the same time. The Disco team was incredibly proud to have been recognized by NFT Now in their NFT 100 of community leaders and builders whose work is bringing forward Web3 in culture, in technology, and in inclusive experiences. So it was a really wonderful honor to be able to go to the Rainbow Room and at the Rockefeller Center, which is pretty wild, for a Web3 purpose and to be able to spend time with other leaders and behold the totality of our space and the way that it's grown. I've seen it over the last decade, which is pretty amazing. Additionally,
That is beautiful.
thank you so much. Yeah, it was awesome to be there amongst so many of our friends and colleagues. And we also participated in a number of other conversations, panels throughout the week. So it's really exciting to see a turn in our industry where we are moving from a discussion of the art of the possible to directing audiences about what they can do right now.
Yeah, that kind of getting also audiences to participate and be so much more a part, especially within the NFT space as it's growing, and it's not just JPEGs and utility and participation, collaboration are all coming online, and even those projects that aren't necessarily DAO, but yeah, no, that's exciting. And plus, I think your picture was up in Times Square. Was that
Yeah, that was pretty
true?
wild. My mom definitely has a little Snapchat of that I sent her that I think is on the refrigerator at home in Ohio right now. But
That's
it was
exciting.
pretty awesome to realize that as an ecosystem, we have grown. And now it is important for us to discuss the full stack experience as opposed to just individual protocol capabilities or individual features. So part of why I'm excited to be here today is to discuss just that. What is the more holistic experience that we're bringing to people today? Because their experience really starts with a wallet.
Beautiful. Yep. Just to let's intro this kind of new Twitter Spaces. We're back this year. And with this particular Twitter Spaces, we're going to be talking about culture, community, our place in it, whether we're dApp builders, platform, wallet, or we're just end consumers. But also, that has a lot more to it these days since you can contribute and be a part of something so much more easily. So yeah, that's going to be the outline of what we're talking about. But I think we should definitely dive into some Disco and DID and see stuff first, just to give audience some background on that side of things and maybe give just an intro. Let's do intros from your side, obviously Disco, but also what other projects you're working on. And then I have a couple fun questions we can use as icebreakers as well.
For sure. So, welcome everybody to the Disco. My name is Evan. I am the co-founder and leader of this particular effort. So, at Disco, we are the purveyors of backpacks. So, we like to talk about data backpacks and your ability to carry information with you from one application to another across protocols into physical space and back. So, in the same way that your wallet carries the financial information, the financial data, and assets that you need from one app to another, Similarly, you're able to use those very same keys from your wallet to own and control more than just tokens, to carry with you signed pieces of data written about you so that you can present them to different apps. So the ultimate goal with Disco is that you never have to fill out a form again. So you can enjoy autofill for everything from your preferred pronouns to your t-shirt size, your preferred language, light or dark mode, your contributions to DAOs, and more. So we're especially stoked about being able to support not only individuals, but also organizational leaders and builders. So Disco today is a bring your own EVM keys web app. You can actually get started right now if you're hanging out at home and you might be near your desktop. Go to disco.xyz, connect your MetaMask wallet with one click, and proceed from there. We're excited to be supporting more wallets and more browsers in the coming sprints as well. And then in terms of other community projects that I'm involved in, I advise a number of Web3 organizations, including Boys Club, NFT, Three, Engage Raise, and the Graph Paper Ventures ecosystem. So I absolutely love mentoring and supporting other teams to realize that Web3 is more than just what we publish on public ledgers. It is the world unlocked with private keys and public ledgers. And so at Disco, we think about crypto as in cryptography, where cryptocurrency is just one of many use cases.
I love that piece too, where there's appropriateness for living on the blockchain and things off the blockchain, and everything comes back to cryptography. It's the beginning of and the end all for both cryptocurrencies and also DIDs and that side. So that would be awesome. Let's talk about that split of what types of information should live on chain, off chain, and not just for privacy or personal reasons, but also maybe the security aspect, maybe resources in terms of if we put everything on the block, the costs would be innumerable. And that's why we have some scaling and storage solutions. But obviously when it comes to personal data, that's a special little niche there because it is so important to us to keep it safe.
So you've mentioned a few great keywords here that I want us to dive into a little bit more. I'm sure, you know, everybody here is probably familiar with fungible tokens, with non-fungible tokens as well. So these are two familiar game pieces in terms of the assets that we can own and control with our keys. However, you've mentioned two more. So just to level set, our fungible and non-fungible tokens are public, immutable, and transferable. Really helpful if we want to be able to encapsulate public data in a form of value that can be shared among others and that is verifiably owned or verifiably mapped to a given set of keys. So for data that is not appropriate to share with everyone on Earth and in space with an internet connection for all time, for data that needs to change and evolve like we do because we are humans and our identities are not fixed, public, permanent, or transferable, for data that is not legal or safe to publish in a publicly accessible form, then we need a different kind of container for that data so that we can still present it to smart contracts, we can still own it and carry it with us, but it is not public because, as you note, there are both important reasons, operational reasons, and also legal reasons that we should not be putting data about human beings on public ledgers. So the other two primitives, data sort of structures that we have to play with here, in addition to our fungible and non-fungible tokens, are decentralized identifiers, or DIDs, and verifiable credentials, or we call them VCs. Sorry to any venture capital affiliated folks out there. Decentralized identifiers.
And shout out to the W3C as well, since that's where those come from, right?
Yes, absolutely. Huge call. The World Wide Web Consortium, the good nerds that bring us the internet, they invented identifiers like the URL. They also, to your point, invented things like the decentralized identifier and verifiable credentials so that the W3C is really good at getting networks that don't talk to each other to communicate, as they did with the early internet. And that's exactly what they're doing again today to help different blockchain ecosystems connect to one another using these primitives. So a decentralized identifier is a way for us to retrofit an existing set of keys and a set of Ethereum keys, Bitcoin keys, PGP keys that you derive from a set of like an ENS address, Tron keys, or you name it. So we're able to basically create a way for any one of these sets of keys, more than 150 different kinds, to be able to share signed messages between each other. So basically allowing us to create a common language between all these different sets of keys that otherwise require different types of blockchain protocols to be able to communicate between them. Now, verifiable credentials, these are the signed statements that can be passed between DIDs. So they're attestations, a statement written by one party about another or about itself that can be passed via API using your crypto keys, like a personal notary stamp, to then send a note to someone else so that anyone who reads that note knows that you are the party who said it. These credentials are gas-free because they're just off-chain files, like PDFs signed with your keys. And so there's no marginal cost to create these attestations, these digital assets. You can generate and send as many as you would like. In fact, you could probably send about 1 billion credentials to 1 billion people for about the same cost that it would take for you to move one NFT on Polygon from one wallet to another. So they're very cost effective. Credentials can be revoked or set to expire, so they can maintain state in a way that on-chain public persistent assets cannot. They are shared with the consent of the subject, meaning that when you receive a credential written about you, it's encrypted against your keys, so only you can open it and only you can then decide to share it. So it is the first consent-first primitive in crypto that we can own with our keys. You noted it's really important for us to be able to have consent-first data and data that can be deleted because we need to comply with a lot of laws when we collect data about human beings. For example, in the state of California, the European Union, countries like Canada, Japan, Chile, there are laws about what you are allowed to do with data about their citizens, where you can publish it, who can see it and interact with it. And if you do not comply with these laws, the fines can be extremely expensive. So in Web3, often we talk about the importance of securities laws as it pertains to our work, but rarely do we talk about data privacy laws, data consent laws, age gating, child online privacy protection, intellectual property, and other laws that govern what data we are allowed to publish for others to access.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there's almost this assumption because it's crypto and cryptographically secure that it is somehow private, but as we all know, that's not the case. It's public on a public ledger. It's very opposite, but I would think that maybe people from the outside, normies, grandparents, et cetera, might think because it's graphically secure that blockchains are inherently private, but that's, people are working on that, but that's not how it started.
That's a really important thing for us to always remember is that a public blockchain is an open API for an equal opportunity surveillance platform. That means that if you publish data on a public ledger, you should operate under the assumption that you have forfeited privacy, not that you have secured privacy. Indeed, the more...
I think the Anon came into that and that spoiled the game, so to speak, where I think early days it felt like you could be pseudo-anonymous, you could be still linked back, but now with all the amount of data plus the tools for essentially the surveillance, and they're all either the indexers, tons of tools that are for positive use, not necessarily nefarious, could absolutely be used to track any person.
Absolutely. And the cultural practice of putting your full legal name on an ENS address and attaching that to your wallet has also made the process of surveilling people much more straightforward. Indeed, we saw hundreds of people who had ENS addresses tied to their wallets or public figures who got dusted with Tornado Cash ETH to make a point because it was straightforward to identify them and there's no consent in your Web3 wallet. So if I know your public key, I can map anything to it that I want, any token that I want without your consent or participation. And if you don't want that token, there's no way for you to reject it. You are forced to accept anything that anyone wants to map to your wallet, to send into your wallet. And then other people outside need to decide whether that was wanted or unwanted and to determine whether or not you actually procured it. If you're not going to remove it from your wallet, it immediately becomes associated with you publicly.
Yeah, so this is an interesting kind of point. Then how do you see the blockchains interacting, your various blockchains interacting with DIDs and VCs in a way that can provide this extra layer of protection of privacy and also modularity within what data you share and how?
So a funny thing about modularity is that it only works if the modular blocks clip together. And in Web3, each chain ecosystem is like a separate set of modules, but like from a different brand of Legos. And so it won't clip together very nicely outside of the EVM ecosystem. So if we look at Solana, Tron, the EVM ecosystem, Bitcoin, right? These are all modular, but have great difficulty sharing data amongst the silos of each of these chain ecosystems. And so what verifiable credentials allow us to do is pack up data so that it can hop from one chain ecosystem to another via API without the need to use a bridge to lock up anything on one side or release a new asset on the other. So we can have a single asset, a credential, a single file that can be read and resolved, relied upon by every single blockchain ecosystem that has a significant user base. The creation of these assets is free. It costs nothing to resolve them. Anyone with a JWT resolver that they find on Google can resolve and ensure that the cryptography is intact. And so when it comes to cost efficiency, security, ensuring that we are not over-publicizing, over-sharing data that is not appropriate for such publication. There's a whole myriad of different benefits. The sort of most important one is that verifiable credentials are the common language spoken by all cryptographic keys. And so there is no need to translate data from one blockchain to another when it's stored in this particular form.
Yeah, so I think, how do we see like the various platforms and ecosystems and eventually end user? Who is it the onus on in order to build out and integrate DID? So like you have Disco that's providing the data backpack and then also the issuing of credentials on the, let's say, organizational side. And so there are those two pieces. What are the other missing puzzle pieces to integrating this into more platforms, dApps, protocols, et cetera?
So really what we're talking about is a three to N-sided marketplace. That three-sided market is starts with the issuers of data who's handing out credentials. Then we have the data backpack owners who receive that data and carry it with them to third-party applications that verify, rely upon that data when people bring it to their front door to provide a more personalized experience right off the jump very quickly. So Disco provides an API and SDK capabilities to support our issuers and verifiers and our web app to support our data backpack owners. However, it's of course very important for us, as you were noting earlier, to think about what does it mean to support these different parties? How is it that we make it easy for them to utilize decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials? So the key here is making sure that we need to solve a really important problem for builders and for dApps in the Web3 ecosystem first. And right now, that problem is that we don't have enough data to have fun. Right now, Web3 social apps, Web3 dApps in general, are all working off the same backend for the most part, which means that they are competing on UX to provide an interesting end user experience, but the only data that they have is public and immutable. That means that the data that makes social networks fun, things like your time zone, your relationship status, your zodiac sign, your favorite color, these pieces of data are unsafe or illegal to put on chain, depending on where users live. So for example, I am in the state of California, and so publishing data about me, my t-shirt size, my favorite color, my home address on a public blockchain can become a huge problem if I ask that company to remove that data because I want for that data to, or that data to no longer exist, as is my right under the law here. if a company is not able to remove that data they've published, they're going to face a whole bunch of fines. So it is not safe or legal to put data about human beings that is specific to their person on a public blockchain. So we need DIDs and VCs as builders if we want to ever use anything more than public financial data or centralized databases siloed to our own apps.
That's awesome. So it feels like it's actually stepping ahead of regulation. If I think back to something like the Blockbuster days, and I noticed Netflix is canceling and stopping their DVD service. So rest in peace, physical media. But back in the day, Blockbuster, there was the Digital Communications Act that basically made it illegal for companies to collect public data or publish it or use that data. So Netflix ran into this problem with the concept of, I want to be able to access my data through an API so that tools can give me, the end user, access to my data. But because of old laws that didn't allow them to surface that data, they could only use it internally as a recommendation engine, et cetera, really stymied their ability. And considering, I believe that law was from something like 1996 or at least in the late 90s, but it seems as if this will allow for data to be published, but it's not public and it can be accessed in a very private and compliant way that makes regulators happy in the current state of how they regulate privacy and private data.
You're totally right. There are so many of these laws that pertain to how data about human beings is allowed to be used, is allowed to be distributed. And I very rarely, outside of even this conversation, have ever heard anyone in Web3 talk about this. Another law that's really important for us to consider is the Child Online Privacy Protection Act. So this governs how apps are allowed to collect information about children under the age of 13. And about what information is allowed to be shown to them. So for example, if an NFT collection has alcohol or marijuana or nudity in it that might be governed by this law, and it's that data is published on an open API surfaced freely to apps of all kinds, then there might be violations of that law. And in the United States, we don't goof around when it comes to children's protection online. And so you can imagine right. that in perhaps even scarier use cases, when it comes to the distribution of content to or about children, that, you know, it's really important for us to follow the law of the places where we practice. And very rarely is there guidance or tooling in Web3 that tells you the consequences of what happens when you touch user data. For example, there are a lot of projects that have documentation online with data schemas for how to collect home address and put it on the blockchain. But they don't also tell you that depending on where you live and your users live, that could be a crime.
Very interesting. And it's to the internationalization of Web3 and crypto. It's no longer based in Silicon Valley where there's experts and knowledge that's wrapping around maybe the local laws. And because there's so much money and influence specifically during or in that location, now that it's distributed everywhere, I think there's that law because we have to work with so many different laws because we are so internationalized. That makes it very difficult to know what and how to comply with and how. Yeah.
So let's
talk about maybe the ways that we can solve this and the tools or some practical examples. You were on Rehash this season, and I believe that you were working with them to issue credentials to their podcast guests as a way to verify and use that information in the future for some purpose. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We think a lot about what it means to put this into practice. So at Disco, we are building and we are offering that street legal path to being able to handle all of the data that you can imagine in a safe and compliant way. And so if you want to experience what it's like to own and control a credential to carry it with you from one app to another, just check out disco.xyz. And we've got a bunch of example apps where you can take your credentials from one space to another and feel what that feels like. In terms of our partnerships in the media space. You are spot on. We love working with Diana Chen and the Rehash community. And so started off with them and have worked with a number of other pods as well. Would love to work with you guys too for these spaces to issue credentials of participation.
Absolutely.
Speakers. So what we did with Diana was helped her to design a credential and then to issue that to everyone who's been a guest on her podcast. So I, as a guest, now have a credential that proves the episode that I was on, that links out to it, and that's signed by Diana's keys. So I'm able to carry that credential with me to applications for other speaker engagements, to my Web3 resume, to Web3 social applications, where I'm able to show, to flex the fact that I was a participant in the Rehash podcast this season. But you don't have to just take my word for it. I have a signed proof from the host.
Now, does that extend? I know that you can set revocation and things like that, but in the way that it's not necessarily published on a blockchain, is it just as good as long as you still maintain physical digital ownership of that file, essentially?
Exactly. So the credential that I received that proves that I was a guest on the Rehash podcast was written and signed by the keys that represent that podcast. So I have a signed encrypted file that's tamper proof, that can be resolved by anyone with an internet connection, that proves that Diana attested that I was a guest on the podcast on a specific episode, and it links to that episode. And so it is trust minimized, just like the data that we get from a blockchain, but it is not published in a way that is public to everyone. It can only be accessed in the specific manner that I have set forth, meaning that I have made it public on my Disco profile. It is accessible by the Disco API to applications that I choose to connect with. Moving forward, Disco will incorporate even more nuanced privacy controls, so we'll be able to selectively share credentials one at a time with specific app interactions or even a specific field. We're also excited about things like predicate disclosure that allow you to prove that you have a credential without showing it to another party.
So these are outside of the standard or spec itself and adding to by providing value in the form of tools or in the form of, let's say, storage, because your data backpack then would be the tool that I would show to someone to prove. What about composability, transferability, interoperability? Because it's a standard and it's their DIDs and VCs, how would they interact with other platforms that might be supporting the same standard?
So imminently composable. The wonderful thing about DIDs and VCs is that they are universally clippable Lego blocks. And so when it comes to interoperability, the data that lives in your data backpack, those credentials, can be carried with you to any application on just about any protocol. Now, when it comes to transferability, it's very important for us to remember that when we achieve something as an individual, when we assert our preference as a human being for something like your favorite color or favorite food, these are not transferable traits. These are specific to us as individuals. And so just like a diploma, once you receive it, graduating from your university, is written about you, it will always be written about you. So too are your credentials. Once they are written about you, they will always be written about you. And so if someone else tries to use your diploma to apply for a job, it will be clear that their name is not the name born on that document. Similarly, if some other party tries to present the file that contains your credentials, but they do not own the address that it describes and the other associated identifiers, then they will not be able to use it. And so in terms of composability, the way that we're able to stack these credentials around ourselves is that it's like a bunch of diplomas. They are all written about us. Credentials can be used in combination with one another or in combination with tokens for access control. So for example, at Disco, if you check out disco.districtlabs.com, we actually have set up some NFT minting contracts on Ethereum and on Polygon, where you can use an off-chain credential in your data backpack to access on-chain logic to mint a Disco mirror-covered NFT. But that particular logic, that flow, also illustrates to us that we can use off-chain credentials to access on-chain logic, from NFT mints to governance capabilities to deep permissioned DeFi pools. So we can require that someone have a credential a set of specific credentials or even a combo of credentials and on-chain tokens or other assets to be able to interact with a given smart contract. We can also use that combo of credentials, tokens, one or the other, for access control to any other space that can be gated digitally, so any application, dApp, or service as well.
That's really interesting. It's with that composability, I can almost see that idea with it interacting with a smart contract as a form of a multi-sig or that account abstraction as well, because you could have the identities that are off-chain credential be able to sign or be able to interact given that they have access. That's really cool.
Totally. And one other thing to jump in and note here in terms of composability for decentralized identifiers is that when you take, you take your Ethereum keys, you retrofit them into a decentralized identifier so that you can use those very same keys to carry around verifiable credentials and sign and issue them. You also create in that process what's called a DID document, like a personal decentralized link tree, a set of directions for how to interact with that DID. And that DID document can contain messaging endpoints, service endpoints. It can contain other sets of keys that are related. And so there's a way for us to daisy chain together different decentralized identifiers, different key pairs, so that we can prove that we own multiple public keys. And we can show any one of those keys while still being able to invoke the credentials or metadata that describes any one of the others. Because you are the same person who shows up to your Ethereum address, your Bitcoin address, your Tron address, your email address. And so why should your data be any different?
That's really cool. So I think if we start thinking about that and it pertains to then community, DAO, contribution, your work separate from maybe DAOs, but project work itself, that's just amazing. And especially the ability for it to work with other on-chain, off-chain. So something like Backdrop.so is working on the concept of a work graph at a protocol level. I can totally see these things meshing and merging, working together in new platforms being created to be able to see the work of others, to be able to collaborate, contribute, and really have all of that data be verifiable and also be what you want to share. But in that same way that a resume or portfolio may have pieces of information that you can only share if someone's signed an NDA, for instance, or that it's under some sort of lock and key that you have to share only given certain circumstance. So that composability and Lego brickability to build these things, and then they interopt with the other chains as well. That's really exciting. On that note, maybe we can switch and start talking about kind of community culture and the other pieces of Web3. And I think you noted it as NFT NYC, not format, but maybe topic matter and interest, and we're along this roadmap where more people are participating. People are members of multiple communities. And I think a lot of this has started top down when it comes to these communities, as I think that Rafi's The Sequence article is really cool about talking about this sequence in which organizations thought about their product, what they created, and then they had their customer at the end, the person that they only cared about once they paid and were a customer. Perfect, great, you're a customer. Web2 and the web brought in the concept of users and user-centered design and really changed the script, flipped the script as it were, is that you had users. And at this point, community has been that neglected afterthought of, oh, these are a bunch of our users that are now gathering together, which is really cool, but it's always been thought of top down as how to structure and organize it. Web3 and DAOs and NFT projects have really turned that around, but there's still a ton of those that participate the most in the community, own the community, and have a lot of sway and say, whether it be in voting or be in the culture of that community. How do we face this next step of letting go and letting communities grow organically, and what are some of the ways that we can foster that, bake it into these communities? And also, there are different types of organizations or projects, etc. So there's certainly a spectrum of need. But I think culture specifically comes into play here hugely. I see the most successful and interesting projects really leaning on either mass culture in form of art and music, but also others like Boys Club or Joke DAO, I think is a really great example of just this organic culture that's been built out of a community of jokesters of some sort of value set. So yeah, I want to kind of get your thoughts on this as you've worked in and worked with various communities. How do you see how do you see us facing this next kind of wave of community and almost it's UX design, but now it's membership design or membership experience or community experience? And how do we harness everything that we've done up to this point as mature Web 2 with all the UX UI and also community building, intentional community building from the IRL world and forums and video games and such, and foster this into building Web 3 organic communities that have a sense of self and belonging and such?
So since the dawn of time, humans have just been trying to vibe with their homies. No one wakes up in the morning with dreams of logging in. And I think in Web3, we forget that sometimes. We have used financial incentives to encourage people to do unnatural behaviors and set up unsustainable models for our protocols to try to settle the new land of Web3, of Ethereum and other protocol ecosystems. But the challenge is that the farmland is rocky, the neighbors are mean, and nobody knows what to plant to create a thriving ecosystem in the crypto space. Because part of the challenge is that we don't have the right nutrients we need in the soil to make this ecosystem thrive. We don't have the data that we need to play complex coordination games. We talk about DAOs right now, but really I think they're more like dinos. They're DAOs in name only. They are centralized group chats with decentralized bank accounts. And the experience of the future of work today is ludicrous. The switching costs of moving from one DAO to another are so high that you need to farm your reputation like it's your first day on the internet when you show up to a new DAO's Discord. It is not possible for you to carry proofs of your ability and contribution from one DAO to another because you do not have the ability to carry any more than your data in a decentralized way from one space to a new DAO. So if we want to lower the switching costs of moving from one activity to another, whether it's moving from our house to our car, one job to another, one DAO to another, one vibe to another, we need to make sure that our data moves with us so that we don't start every single new experience like it's our first day on the internet with a bunch of forms to fill out. I think it's really important for us.
Protocol layer too. Oh yeah, I was just going to say, it's like at that protocol layer, instead of a million dApps trying to solve this problem of the new work problem, they're all at the higher level in terms of trying to build on top of Discord, on top of, or even building new tools and trying to bring those in. We need actually a better data solution. And I think I know which it is, but in other words, we need better data.
Absolutely. If we wanted to form a DAO in this Twitter space right now, and the only thing that we knew about one another were our public keys, the only kind of DAO that we could build is an investment DAO. We could pool capital together and spend it. Maybe we could buy some NFTs together and play OpenSea collection management, or we could go off in DeFi together and play casino. But we would not be able to write a newsletter because we don't know what language everyone else speaks based on their public keys. We couldn't plan a party because we don't know who has experience in party planning based on those keys. We couldn't build a product because we don't know who's an engineer or a product person or designer based on those keys alone. So indeed, we can't really do much of anything if the only thing we know about one another is how much money we have. If you are not people to me, you're just piles of tokens. We can't have much of a party if the only way we can talk to each other is by throwing money at one another.
I love, like, it just, you have a way with words, this is for sure. So, interesting thing is, if we have, like, today, if we wanted to start this concept, how would we go about it in a better way than we have currently? Because we do only have the tools, and a lot of this is happening, the information that we're sharing is happening offline in Discord video calls and Zooms and chats that aren't being captured? And how does the value of those interactions get captured and shared in meaningful ways where it's not overload and overkill in terms of every single message that I've had with a group squad that we're going to build something together? And really, it's about the outcome of that result. Or maybe there wasn't an outcome, but there was still building that happened. And I'm speaking more build dev specific, so I could see more of a GitHub type scoring and that value system. And then also, where is the responsibility? Is that on Disco side, on the issuer side, on a new platform that starts to value things like code contributions and if they're passing test for build, et cetera? But yeah, where do you see people building and connecting in that space?
So for dApp developers who want to bring more data to their app experiences and allow individuals to carry that data to their front door so that it can be part of their experience from the moment they connect their wallet, all those builders have to do is ask or ping me for a Disco API key. All they have to do is call the Disco API when someone connects their wallet, and they're going to be able to pull it in their backpack right away. Now, for builders who want to be able to issue credentials, you can go into disco.xyz, use the web app, and issue batches of credentials to hundreds of friends right away, right now. You can customize the design of those credentials with images, text, GIFs, branding, whatever your preferred look, in the same way that you can design an NFT to look how you prefer. So right now, those tools are available off the shelf this very instant. If you would like to be able to issue credentials based on, for example, a form that someone fills out in your app or an action that they take inside of your app, that's simply programmatic issuance enabled by some code snippets that we can provide. We actually already have that ability built into the Disco app right now, so that when you complete onboarding, you automatically or programmatically receive a credential that attests to the fact that you're a Disco user. It's the Disco not credential. And so that sort of automatic ability to issue a credential based on an in-app event is already live today, something that we can help builders get up and running. Now, in terms of creating new kinds of schemas, anyone can do that. We're putting together a schema builder tool to make that even easier, but also ChatGPT is a pretty great wingman for that activity as well. We think it's really important for everyone to be able to freely and easily access these new primitives and new capabilities. And so our goal is to make the experience for developers and for individuals as simple and straightforward as possible.
So right now, the tools, let's announce that again, just since I think you've announced some new tool, UI and some new tooling that's available now that wasn't a couple of weeks ago. Is that correct?
Yes. That was a little hidden alpha leak. Thank you for reminding me, Robert. I forget that we haven't shared all of this publicly yet. So for those who are excited about adding a GIF to your credentials, being able to customize your branding and change the visual look in the same way that you can modify the look of an NFT when you create it, we now have unveiled just recently the ability to do this custom branding. We also recently have introduced the ability to basically send a bunch of credentials all at once in one click, in the same way that you can send an email to a bunch of recipients. You can now issue batches of credentials to groups of recipients. So we want to make it as easy, if not indeed easier and less expensive, to issue millions of credentials as opposed to using a similar on-chain asset that would involve gas fees and additional complexity. One other alpha leak that I'm excited to share right now is that we are actually building out programmatic issuance for things like Twitter Spaces, the one that we're in right now, and Discord Stages, so that community leaders will be able to automatically issue credentials of participation to people who attend 80% or more of a Twitter Space or Discord Stage, or those who choose to participate in the conversation while it's going on. So if you ask a question or you show up for the space and decide to hang out for most of that conversation, you can collect a credential that proves that you were part of that experience. And so by incorporating more of these programmatic or automatically issued credentials where you can passively collect proofs of what you've been up to, as opposed to manually having to collect them in a consent first way, we think this is going to be feeding into that flywheel and will do what you had asked, Robert, which is how can we more easily collect the valuable data in a large form that we can then parse and interpret later in a way that's going to make sense to our community.
Yeah, that is very exciting. We have some alpha coming soon, And I think we'll be able to utilize the credential system in an off-chain way that was becoming more difficult in an on-chain way. Yes, this is exciting. So I'm definitely going to be using your tool, and I'm going to go check that out. Disco.xyz. So that's where you are right now. Can we talk about where you will be in a couple seasons or quarters from now, or what your goals are? And then are there other platforms that you're working with in terms of integrating, or any other exciting partnerships, that type of thing going on?
Most certainly. So for the rest of this year, we are focused on empowering the Web3 builder and user community. So extending the abilities of our existing wallets and our existing keys, giving them new superpowers so we can use the same keys to do more stuff. Then in that act of extending our key abilities and building out more performance storage, we are creating that street legal way for your keys to handle personally identifiable data that is not legal or safe to publish on chain. So we will be bringing all the data that's not fit for the chain to the Web3 ecosystem this year in a smart contract interaction ready form. And then next year, we will be tackling all the world beyond the chain. So being able to support users who are not yet ready to manage their own keys, but are still ready to start their Web3 experience. So I think it's really crucial to underscore the fact here that you do not need to fund your wallet to use your Web3 keys to own and control digital assets that can do things for you, to create assets and send them to others. You can use the keys that you have in a free way to interact with these off-chain credentials. And so you can get used to the experience of ownership and control, of self-custody, without having to fund your wallet first. So we're able to increase the total accessible market to everyone with a funded crypto wallet. So that means you probably have a government ID, access to a fiat on-ramp, to everyone on Earth with access to an internet connection. So a much larger potential audience for everyone here using Disco's tools, as opposed to just the off-the-shelf Web3 wallets that we have today.
This is a great segue, as we are an account abstraction smart contract wallet at Ambire. So that's really interesting, as we're self-custodial, but you don't have to manage your keys. You don't have to manage a seed phrase, because we use account abstraction, and with 4337 coming on mainnet and available for all, that's super exciting for us as a whole. But also, how do you see people in the wallet space acting with, let's say, Disco? Could you see, in other words, how would you see some integration of Disco with our wallet?
So when it comes to exciting partners, this is something that I'm really looking forward to on the horizon. In the same way that your wallet is the welcome mat to Web3, we think that welcome mat can be extended to even more people. One thing that I would love to see in the future that I'm really excited to team up with you about after this conversation is how we can surface credentials inside of a wallet so that you can use your credentials together with your tokens when you interact with smart contracts. For example, you can imagine carrying around a credential that proves that you've passed KYC, that you're a resident of a specific country, that you're not a part of a given sanctions list. And so you can present those credentials along with your tokens to deposit into a permissioned DeFi pool. For years, we've worked with a number of partners in the wallet space, some of whom have seen this vision, some of whom have not. So I think that in the same way that the early 2000s brought the browser wars, now this year we will see the wallet wars. And I think that a way that y'all can win in these wallet wars is to bring forth the data that represents a full person, not just their financial interactions, so that wallet can be their key to the metaverse, not just their key to financial interactions.
No, I'm extremely excited about that. This is definitely, we're yeehaw for the wallet wars. We've been gearing up for years with account abstraction and working on these things. So we're excited and ready for it. ETH is doing right now. Things are looking up as a whole. So it's exciting times, definitely. I think also really exciting is just what has happened in the bear with the amazing amount of builders and tools and just people thinking at really high levels, but being silly in playful in a way that has allowed for us to have so many awesome primitives that have been built upon that then give us tools, platforms that I remember just trying to start a DAO and 2017 and that the concept of deploying and understanding how it works versus we have joke DAO now. And then it's showing through having fun and being silly. You can do something like this, but have it be for something very serious. And I think that's the other really exciting part about this time is just seeing way more examples of fun of a, for instance, Disco isn't just a flat dApp with a boring story. It's interesting and it has a personality. The backpack, the disco ball, the multifaceted. I love your analogy of the disco ball being many facets of your data being reflected back into the world in various ways. And I think that was the other piece of this culture of we're having fun with it. And so it has a feeling of belonging, of participating in something. And maybe you can speak to just how you've fitted in culture and community in other groups, but also how you decided with Disco to not be boring.
So fortunately for me, I was born into a desire to not be boring. And so that's definitely something that I've carried with me my whole life, my whole career, and something that I share with all of the Disconauts on my team. When
be interesting and interested.
Yes, exactly. Earnest enthusiasm never goes out of style. And we very much believe at Disco that the earnest pursuit of what is best in service of data backpack owners will always be the best choice for us. And it's that earnest dedication to a shared goal that really calls me to my participation in different communities. I first was inspired by decentralized ledger technologies before I even knew the word Web3. It was just Bitcoin to me at that point, a little over 10 years ago. And so my first experience of culture was learning about the builders in the early Bitcoin ecosystem, having the opportunity to hang out in their apartments in Brooklyn and to be welcomed into a space of misfits and nerds and open source software enthusiasts and cypherpunks. And so I was first introduced to Bitcoin actually by my 27-year-old female computer science professor. And so it was a bunch of young women who first welcomed me into the cryptography and cryptocurrency space. So I didn't get the memo that this space wasn't for me, that it was built by people whose experiences didn't mirror mine, because the people who welcomed me in first were a lot like me. And so that's why it's really important for me to spend as much time as I'm able in my free time, that's certainly less than normal these days, but I love to lecture at universities so that I can be that person for another young female student who helps welcome them into this space and make them feel confident. I also love working with organizations like Boys Club, the global community of women and non-binary people in Web3, boysclub.vip for anyone who's interested in checking them out more online. But it's really important that they create spaces of welcoming and confidence for people of all identities so that we can have a flourishing and diverse Web3 that mirrors the communities that we live in IRL.
I love that. This is just the cultural piece of Web3 being so much more inclusive and not wanting to repeat the mistakes of Web2. I think a lot of that was geographic as well in terms of influence of Silicon Valley. And now we have a lot more diversification across the globe in various places, but you could be anywhere sitting in a coffee shop and be participating in this world and be welcomed into it. I think that's a huge piece to the Web3 community, is that it is extremely welcoming. And the other piece also is that it's no longer technical. It used to be, you had to be a builder, you had to be a nerd, had to understand these things. And as we move forward, especially with the efforts of groups like Odyssey DAO and Dream DAO trying to bring million Gen Zers in that might be internet natives, but might not necessarily be technical, but there's tons of ways. In a similar way, hackathon culture takes all kinds. Like, you need everyone to participate, from people that just have ideas to people that can help organize to the people that can build. And bringing more people in is always a good thing. More views, more points of view, more creativity, and excited for this bear market still. And when the bull comes, I hope we'll all be ready to scale up and bring it to people that haven't necessarily touched these spaces and have the experience that we have. So I think there's a responsibility of translating all the warmth and welcome that we got from participating early in these spaces as they scale up and financials get crazy too. And conglomeration, but I think because of the natural decentralized nature that we're striving for, we'll be able to get there.
There is no way for us to create a more equitable future if we translate the biases we know to already exist onto the new systems that we're building today. So I think it is crucial for us to bring in new types of data to create a more level playing field so that we can recognize more than the value of money. In Web3, as you note, those who arrive early get the alpha. And we've created already a system of imbalance, an asymmetric totem pole where those closer to the gossip get wealthy and those further away from it get exit liquidity. And in order for us to move away from these Ponzi games and to incentivize sustainable behaviors as opposed to unsustainable ones, I think that the key to the metaverse is having the right kind of data. And so to help wrap up our thoughts a little bit today, I want to thank everybody for joining us and remind everyone that, you know, wallets are for money, backpacks are for culture, and you need both to go on a really fun adventure.
Again, beautifully said. On that note, and since we're wrapping up, I just had a couple questions. Actually, just one as a, what, I actually, we didn't go through the other questions. So is there any just ridiculously fun project that just tickles you every time that might not have the greatest value, but you're just super excited? For me, it's always Pool Suite. They're just Marty and the creativity and creation there is so beautiful and so awesome and so culturally grounded. Utility when it comes, there's parties, there's interesting merch from that side. It's just a fun, interesting project. Do you have one in mind yourself?
I also applaud Marty's incredible vision and cultural prowess. He's certainly been an incredible leader in that space for, at this point, over a decade in various different forms. So really completely agree with you there. I want to call out a colleague and fellow builder of Marty's who comes from a slightly different corner of the metaverse, but I think has a lot of shared vibes, and that's Meltem Demirers. So she is the incredible, accomplished leader of the CoinShares firm. But in addition to that, has also brought cultural leadership to the Crypto Dickbutts NFT collection. And Meltem's parties for Crypto Dickbutts, the future world reserve currency, are some of the most creative, clever, historically relevant events in all of crypto, from renting out the Russian baths and commissioning a four-part opera to black tie masquerade with a choreographed ballet showing the history and lore of the Crypto Dickbutts. Meltem's creative expression around ritual, gathering, in-person experiences, and even shared digital experiences, such as Crypto Dickbutts sort of Sunday ceremonies on Twitter spaces, have all shown us that the ritual we find in physical communities, even in religious communities, can be mirrored in different forms and ways to help us get a great vibe, even when the centering item is the centering object or reason for gathering is a silly NFT. So I think that Meltem's leadership has shown us the importance of ritual in community, and Marty's practice does the same in a different font, but definitely the same impact.
Nice. Yeah, these are, and I think back to the early days of the internet, that's where we all had fun. You could build silly things that were cool, and it suddenly came with a ton of cultural cash or attaché or the ability for it to spread very quickly. And obviously, we're living in a memetic world, and so memes spread. On that note, thank you so much, Evan, for being on our Twitter Spaces today. Where can people find you and find out more about Disco?
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a wonderful adventure, and I am so excited for the next one. If you want to follow along on our journey with Disco, you can always follow me here on Twitter at Proven Authority. We're also here as Disco at DiscoXYZ, tagged in the title of this Twitter space. If you want to share some of your metaverse dreams with us, let us know what you'd like to see next. You can always provide us product feedback within the product at disco.xyz. You can also drop us a note at DiscoXYZ or at hello@disco.xyz. And we look forward to hearing all of your ideas, the ways that you would like to build and teaming up together.
Can't wait. to talk more about integrations, partnerships, and exciting futures. Thank you again so much, and look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks so much, everyone. We'll see you in the metaverse.